Support for WPR comes from UW-Superior Center for Continuing Education, offering Conversations on Living Alone, a three-part series beginning Wednesday, April 17th via Zoom. Details at uwsuper.edu. Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin DNR, preventing food waste and composting scraps and uneaten veggies, grains, and fruit can help the environment. More dnr.wi.gov by searching food waste.
Welcome to the Midday for a Friday. I'm Norman Gilliland with, as promised, some live music here in our Buck studio. Always a pleasure, and it will be a pleasure today, to be sure. We have some interesting pairings of pieces. And with me is my guest, who will be playing R. Mason and Hamlin here in the Buck studio, Claire Longendyke.
Hi, Norman. Greetings, everyone.
Welcome to the Midday to you, Claire. And you have come from...
Indianapolis.
Indianapolis,
yes.
Today.
I'm from Minneapolis. I came from the other polis, which is a little bit further south.
The other polis, yeah.
A little bit down 90 and then 65.
Are you just kind of traveling around, or did you come up just to see us?
I came up just to see you, and then whenever I'm up here, I try to catch my family in La Crosse. So after
we chat today
and have a little performance, I'm headed to La Crosse for a Robert Burns supper to celebrate the great Scottish poet.
Oh, okay. Isn't that usually in January?
Or? It is, but, you know, we're kind of winging it this year.
That's okay.
It's always a good time to celebrate Robert Burns.
He keeps... Do you find yourself affecting a Scottish accent then after all of this?
Only if really, truly begged to do so, but very rarely.
It's easy to fall into.
It
what
is.
Fun.
Aye. Yeah.
Yes, I actually have the distinction of having missed a bus right near his home in Ayr in Scotland one time.
I actually still haven't been, but that is going to be with some Scotch tasting in the Highlands and a tour of the Robert Burns area and home. I think that would be a great highlight of travel for me.
It's going to be more French today, though.
It is.
And before we get into the music, you're a proponent of new music, to say the least.
I am,
what, something
yes.
like 100... performances of first-time pieces?
I think that maybe I may have surpassed that a couple years ago already. I feel like at this point I'm up close to 200. And that includes, you know, that includes solo piano pieces that have been written for me, chamber music pieces that I've participated in the premiere of. So it's a wide array of repertoire that I've premiered, but it's really always a great pleasure for me to get to work with living composers in that way and to be a champion of new music.
And what... inspires you to pair up, as you're going to be doing today, the work of, say, Debussy and brand new composers?
So when I perform old music, I'm always cognizant of the fact that classical music doesn't have the same kind of place in our culture as it did back when this music was being written at the turn of the 20th century and in the 1800s even, where there wasn't rock and pop and folk and rap and hip hop and all of this other style of music to choose from. Classical music and folk music was sort of what they had. And audiences know some classical music, but it's not necessarily as familiar as it is to me because my world revolves around classical music and probably a lot of the WPR listeners as well. And so when I'm introducing the newest music to an audience, in order to contextualize what is for me very familiar, you know, maybe some post-tonal writing, maybe some gestures that feel a little, crunchy, I like to say.
Music that works.
Music that doesn't sound like Beethoven, music that doesn't sound even like Debussy. I like to contextualize it with music that at the time that it was written, so for example, Debussy's Preludes in 1909 to 1913, may have actually sounded crunchy to those audiences,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, kind of out there.
Right, and for us, it's just, turn of the 20th century Debussy. So putting that in context, I think, is a really powerful tool to help audiences love new music.
Always fun to imagine what, say, Chopin would have thought of Debussy.
That's a great question.
And the imagination can run pretty well.
It sure can,
Your guess is as good as mine, to say the least.
That's right.
Well, speaking of these pairings, then, we're going to actually start with a composer who's kind of an outlier in what we've just been talking about, which
is
Robert Schumann.
That's
and
right.
Arabesque means ornamented, and it certainly is. This only, so far as I know, only arabesque that Schumann wrote.
I believe so, yeah. And I always like to draw the parallel to dance when I'm talking about this. An arabesque is, as you said, a sort of a ballet ornamentation. It's a twirl. And this piece is very ornamental. That's a great way to think about it because it's sort of, you know, simple chord changes that just kind of spin around in this beautiful poetic texture as we're used to hearing from Schumann. So,
well, let's have at it then. The Arabesque in C by Schumann, Claire Longendyke.
Thank you.
some quintessential Schumann there in the form of his Arabesque, played live in our Buck studio during the midday this Friday afternoon by my guest, Claire Langendijk, who is going to pair the rest of the pieces that we're going to be hearing during this hour, contemporary composer with, well, Debussy in all three cases. And so how do you approach Sales and Olga to pair them? What's the pairing there?
You know, that's a great question. So, full disclosure, usually there is a different piano portrait by Amy Williams. This is Olga is from a set of 10 piano portraits by living composer Amy Williams, who is based in Pittsburgh, teaches at UPitt, and is, I feel like I'm one of her biggest fangirls, is truly, I think, one of the most exciting composers and pianists that I've encountered working, in my experience working with many, many, many composers. I love what she does with the piano in particular. And usually I pair Sales or Veils, as I personally like to translate it from voile, the French, with a piece that is dedicated to Ivar Makashov, a very important new music pianist who was Amy's teacher at the University at Buffalo. But in concert, when there are people watching me, I think Ivar, that piece, works really well. On the radio, maybe not so much. There's a little bit of extra sounds that I wasn't sure if it would translate well. So the reason I jumped to Olga then is because for me, Debussy's Prelude, Veils is all about layering. We have so many different things happening. We've got this low bass ostinato, this low B flat that's just really activating the rest of the keyboard. We've got this very iconic da 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 dum da dum whole tone scale theme that weaves its way in and out the entire prelude, inside and out of the entire prelude. And then we have a bunch of other stuff happening, either melodic sort of primary material or background, I like to call it fuzz, that sort of creates this very rich texture that we associate with Debussy, not because it creates a big wall of sound, but because it creates sort of this like shimmering, dusty atmosphere around everything else that's happening. And in Olga, we really have a very similar approach to, I want to say counterpoint, that may not actually be the right term, but to a multi-layered texture. We've got this really thick and sort of undulating interior accompaniment in the sort of my inner fingers 1, 2, and 3 of my right and left hand. And then we have this duet happening in my pinkies that is, you know, this primary singer, let's say, accompanied by this lower baritone that goes throughout the entire piece.
All right, so we'll say Veils.
Yes.
And Olga.
Uh-huh.
Debussy and Amy Williams.
That's right.
Paired, one right after the other.
One right after the other.
Back to Claire. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd say that pairing makes a lot of sense, Claire.
You know, I think so too. That's maybe the first time that I've paired those two, but I like it a lot. I think it's going to happen again on concerts.
And you heard it first right here on WPR. Where we'll have our quiz question in about 60 seconds or so, right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. First, we'll review yesterday's 12:30 quiz question, which went like this. The term for a non-conforming pedestrian, this term, was once applied to drivers, too. That would be jaywalker and jaydriver, which makes perfect sense. Don't know why that ever slipped out of the language. That was yesterday's question, and here's today's. Have some fun, in particular, if you're phoning in. Today's question, a real-life coastal fossil dealer is said to be the subject of this tongue twister. A real-life coastal fossil dealer is said to be the subject of this tongue twister. What's the tongue twister? You have about 27 minutes to identify it by emailing us at midday@wpr.org, or you can take a shot at it by phoning Amanda at 1-800-442-7106. And as always, we'll draw our prize for today from the name of all correct respondents and see who wins said prize just before 1 o'clock. In the meantime, back to these pairings and my guest today, live here in the Buck studio, Claire Longendyke. And she's been pairing, or just recently did pair, a contemporary composer with Claude Debussy, and same composer again. Is this also from Amy Williams' portraits?
That is correct, yes.
Ursula?
Ursula, and Olga, who I just played, was Amy's maternal grandmother. Ursula, for us new music lovers and appreciators, classical music appreciators, is a little bit, oh, I see some recognition.
Oppens,
on
Ursula Oppens.
Oppens. That's exactly right. And, you know, Ursula Oppens is somewhat of a real life role model and hero for me, heroine for me. And so when Amy dedicated one of her portraits to Ursula, I was thrilled because I didn't commission this book. I commissioned the second book of piano portraits, which Ursula is in book one. But as soon as I saw that there was one for Ursula, I was thrilled. And then I got my fingers into it and I thought, oh no, what am I doing? Because Ursula Oppens is this just beast of a pianist. She can do anything. And at the age of, how old? I think she's turning 85. Maybe she's,
wow.
I don't want to misage her. Maybe 80, 85. She still has the technique that she has always had as a performer, and it's just a thrill to get to hear her. But this portrait in particular is pretty ghastly in terms of the technique. It's all over the place. I'll be crossing my arms over one over the other. I'll be playing really fast, and it's fun. It's kind of like I don't know, a modern day boogie woogie maybe.
Wow.
Demonic boogie woogie.
And you're pairing that first with Debussy's The Dance of Puck.
Puck's Dance, that's right. And to talk about another, he's not really a demon. He's more of a mischievous sprite,
yes.
But he kind of wreaks havoc all over Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. So you could say there's a little bit of devilishness in him, I would say.
For sure, yes. There's a wonderful long tradition of those, you know, Scarbos and
yes,
other characters,
exactly.
Especially
that's
in
right.
Late 19th, early 20th century music.
Absolutely.
So, Puck's Dance from Debussy, and segueing right from that, Amy Williams' Ursula.
Thank you.
some suspense there as you're all left hand for a while there, just kind of warming up almost.
That's right. What's going to happen next?
Yeah, some suspense there. And of course, then it ends much the same way.
It does. That's right. Except the holes start coming in. Then yeah. It's like, is it over? And then for audiences who aren't quite sure when to clap, it creates somewhat of a cliffhanger.
Yes, that's right. That's when it's up to the performer to communicate with body language.
That's right. It is done. That's right.
And I can imagine there would be some body language appropriate after going through all that. You would let your shoulders slump a little bit.
That's right. Some sort of release of relief, I guess, of tension, as the case may be.
But again, I think that pairing works really well.
They have similar vibes, as we say, don't they? Yeah, they really boil down to... And, you know, for people that listen... who may not be familiar with the Debussy Preludes, for example, which is actually a lot of people. When I say Debussy, what do people think of?
Of course.
Right, exactly.
It's a good one,
but there's so much more. And so when I mention Debussy Preludes, they're not necessarily expecting Puck, or they're not necessarily expecting Veils. And so then when I put them to the test and say, how do you hear Amy Williams as being different from Debussy? Sometimes they're a little bit of a loss because there are a lot more similarities, one could say, than there are differences.
And the two pieces, by the way, that we just heard, La Danse de Puck from Debussy, and then just now Ursula by Amy Williams.
From the Piano Portraits.
Her Piano Portraits, both played by my guest here in the Buck Studio today, this Friday afternoon, Claire Longendyke. And we'll hear more from Claire and the Mason and Hamlin. And also, I'll repeat our quiz question, all of that after this here on WPR. Today's quiz question. A real-life coastal fossil dealer is said to be the subject of this tongue twister. What's the tongue twister? You can email your answer to us the usual way at midday@wpr.org, or you can call 1-800-442-7106 and give your answer to Amanda. And as usual, we'll see who wins today's prize from among our correct respondents after some more music. Two more paired pieces by my guest today, Claire Longendyke, and again, Claude Debussy represented, and Fireworks?
Fireworks, that's correct.
And I can imagine then, without knowing Anthony Green, mm-hmm. but hearing his piece as you performed it on YouTube.
Yes.
there will be some fireworks in there too. And the title of his piece, To Anacreon in the U.S., if there's a connection to Anacreon in heaven. I didn't hear it. Is there one?
There is indeed.
Is there really?
You have to listen very carefully, but the first few notes I play are these.
Oh, sure.
Yep.
Okay.
And so
To Anacreon in heaven being the original drinking song version of the Star Spangled Banner.
That's exactly right. So it's hard to hear, and you really have to listen closely, but you're not necessarily supposed to hear it within the texture, much like at the end of Debussy's Feu d'Artifice fireworks. Which is when the Marseillaise,
oh,
the French
sure,
national
yes,
anthem,
course.
Comes out. So that's the connection.
All for Bastille Day. All right, here we are. Feu d'Artifice by Debussy, and then To Anacreon in the U.S. by Anthony R. Green.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, the Mason and Hamlin held up nicely.
It sure did. It's a beautiful instrument, and I'm glad to be able to play on it today. So thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming in, Claire. And what we just heard was To Anacreon in the U.S. by Anthony R. Green. Is that a composer of your acquaintance?
You know, I go way back with Anthony. Anthony and I were college friends. We were in the same studio at Boston University. His career has bloomed and grown in beautiful ways, and he's currently living in the UK now. But I have sort of tuned into, I knew him as a pianist first, and tuned into his music when I had some free time on my hands in 2020. And this piece just really spoke to me. It was composed as a postlude to Feu d'Artifice, so it was really meant to be played in the way that we just heard it. And, you know, as my interpretation with it has grown, I found it to be a magical work of music, and my relationship and friendship with Anthony has grown in parallel, which is a beautiful thing.
And we paired his To Anacreon in the U.S. with Fireworks by Claude Debussy. And again, well, there were plenty of fireworks in both pieces.
That's true. I think so, too.
And the other connection, too, of course, you have the Marseillaise hinted at in the Debussy and the Star-Spangled Banner hinted at in
That's
To
right.
Anacreon in the
U.S. A little
bit
US. Harder to hear in Green's piece, but
You almost have to know it's there and then listen for it.
You do. And especially special because the last two tracks on the CD that I'm releasing on March 1st, so you're some of the first that get to hear it, and I'm so pleased to share it with you.
Kind of a sneak preview. And you're acquainted with Amy Williams, too, the other contemporary composer we've been hearing.
Yes, exactly. In fact, I like to say that I fell in love with her music when I first got to hear her perform one of her largest solo piano pieces to date, which is a piece that I went on to perform upwards of 50 times on three different continents and or three different countries, two different continents, and is a piece that I hope to record sometime in the future called Cineshape 4, another really novel and...
It's called what?
Cineshape.
Cineshape?
Yes, it's a piece of music that is influenced by a film. So a term that she came up with, and I think there are five of them, five cineshapes.
Well...
another piece to check out.
Yes, and I gather these composers, Amy Williams and Anthony R. Green, are fairly prolific too. But,
they are.
But of course, that's a lot of grist at your mill requires if you have played 100 or more now contemporary pieces.
You have to churn through them a little bit. That's definitely true. It's been a short period of time too, but you know, it's always a pleasure to feel like I'm helping to shape the classical music world as we go into 2024 and beyond, which is really special.
Well, it's certainly been special having you with us today. And where are you headed in terms of your next performance?
That's a great question. I'm headed to the Twin Cities, which is where I'm from originally. I'm playing Rhapsody in Blue with an orchestra there, like so many, to celebrate the centennial of that piece.
It's also going public domain, I think.
It sure is, although you know, you still have to get permissions and all of those things, like in classical music, you know, there's always somebody to report to, so.
Well, that will be fun.
It will be. I'm looking forward to it.
And thanks again, Claire Langendijk. It's been fun having Claire Langendijk with us for this hour, and we'll listen for some more, too. Getting to our quiz question. Our quiz question today, a historical coastal fossil dealer is said to be the subject of this tongue twister. What tongue twister would that be? Well, a lot of people know it or figured it out, understandably. She sells seashells by the seashore.
Indeed, she does.
And the real person was Mary Anning, and there's quite a story about her in her own right, tongue twister notwithstanding. Our winner today from among many correct respondents is Anne Huntoon of Tomahawk, Wisconsin, and we'll send the prize to you if you will email back with an address. And our prize today, can we get a CD from you, Claire?
You absolutely can.
And thanks for listening to The Midday.
I was going to offer that. That's perfect. That's a great idea.
Good. Yeah, it's kind of...
And in fact, if you remind me her name, I'll personalize it for her too. I'll bring one up for the station, and then I'll bring one up. Can I give that to you? I know I don't remember the name of your colleague that I'm supposed to deliver it to, the music librarian.
Oh, he's not here anyway. So.
Oh, okay, perfect.
Yeah, no, you can just bring it to me.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, her name is Anne Huntoon.
Anne with an E or Anne without an E?
No E.
No E.
I even double checked that.
All right. Well, that was fun.
Yeah, that's what we do here.
I very much enjoyed it.